I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Alex broadcasts voices of climate survivors in the United States and Canada. Recorded in press events, June 6, 2024.
Next to Heather McKay, she is a hairstylist, mother and grandmother, who lost her home in the summer of 2023 wildfire in Kelowna, British Columbia. Here she is from Ottawa, outside the presentations to Parliament. From the outside, Heather McKay.
My name's Heather McKay. I'm from Kelowna, British Columbia. In August of last year, on Thursday, the 17th of August, I was getting ready for work when I found out we were on evacuation alert. I left for work and I have yet to return home. On the next, no, that night actually, on my way home from work, by the time I crossed the bridge and to the road that I had to go on to get to our house, they just closed it. So I called my daughters and my husband and told them they needed to leave immediately. And if they could get me some clothes, that would be really great as well. So I drove down the highway a little further and found a gas station I could wait for my husband at. And my husband and our daughters packed up our kittens and a dog, and we all went in different directions. We stayed in three different places. Homes, but we had to keep switching because it's hard to stay at one place too long to impose. We've found a place to rent finally in October, and we got our own place again. And so in the months since then, we consider it a second life. We have before the fire and after the fire. And it's a rush of emotions. I feel anxiety and depression. I feel guilt that I wasn't there to help my family. I feel heartbroken when I hear my daughters talk about how they wish they had some of their stuffies from when they're little, or their baby box, or how they'll never be able to use my wedding dress in their weddings. I feel embarrassed that I mourn material possessions. But I do. That was 49 years of curated things that was gone into 6 inches of ash. I miss our family dynamic in that home. I'll never get to rock my grandson to sleep in that chair again. The stairwell that I held my daughter as she experienced her first heartbreak. The deck where we used to sit and have our family activities. I can never have my grandmother's doilies at Christmas anymore. I had no idea that we'd be impacted for so long. It's just stuff, right? But it has severely impacted our family. And I worry. Our rental that we have currently is by the hospital. And I'm so grateful because I know they'll never let the fire get close to the hospital when they come again. And they will come. I worry about the life that my grandson will have. Will he be able to have a life in Canada? We are on fire. And I know we can never stop all the fires, the floods, but we can reduce them. And I think Canadians are deserving of a future. I think Canadians should not have to worry whether they're going to be having to evacuate for weeks, months. We should be able to leave in security. And so I came here to Ottawa to beg politicians to make a change. As a mother, as a meemaw, we need to cap emissions and we need to make some changes so that our children and our grandchildren can have a future. Thank you so much.
Heather McKay lost her home to wildfire in 2023. She spoke at an Ottawa press event June 6th.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio. for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
It is alarming when a town burns down. Reminder, cities can burn too. The old town of Lytton, British Columbia, was setting national heat records day after day, absolute new high temperatures for all of Canada, until it suddenly burned. That was June 30th, 2021. Practically nothing has been rebuilt since. Megan Fandrich is a resident of Lytton. She is a parent, a neurodivergent writer, and author of Burning Sage, Poems from the Lytton Fire. We will hear from Megan at the Ottawa Press Conference June 6th, and then a reading of one of her poems.
Hi, everyone. My name is Megan, and I'm from Lytton. And I think most Canadians have heard of Lytton, definitely not before the fire. It's a tiny little village. It was a tiny little village, even tinier now. On June 30th, 2021, so almost 3 years ago, our town burned to the ground. And I think most people know that. They know about, you know, the moment of the fire. You can imagine running from the flames like I did, like most of my community did. You can imagine watching your town turn into a pillar of smoke that's big enough to be seen from space. You can imagine seeing that pillar and the black punctuations of smoke that come up as another car explodes, another propane tank, another house. For me, I didn't lose my house. It was saved by firefighters. I had to evacuate for a month, and then I went back. I'm a single parent, and my daughter had just turned 5 in time for the fire. And we went back to a burned up town. And there was that moment of the fire, right? When we think of climate disaster, yes, we think of that moment of the fire. We think of running from the flames. But for me, and for the other survivors, and for anyone who knows grief or loss or trauma, it is not just that moment. That is the moment when everything changes, when everything you trusted to be normal is gone. But you have to keep going. You have to keep surviving in the midst of trauma, in the midst of ongoing natural disasters that just kept buffeting Lytton. We had floods that washed out Highway 1 on each side of town. We had the worst snowfall in decades, and we were told that our roofs might collapse on us. And this, dealing with these kind of things in the middle of that intense trauma, and that intense trauma just kept going and going and going. And we couldn't even start healing with the reconstruction of our town. It's been 3 years, and there's, I think, 3 or 4 homes under construction now. That is not the reconstruction of the hundreds of homes that we lost. When I think about my experience being a single parent, trying to keep my daughter alive through trauma in a burned up town, when the closest grocery store, we had 2 that we lost in the fire, and now the closest grocery store is an hour away on a sketchy highway that is slowly falling into the river. Trying to keep her alive through the depths of the trauma and the grief and the loss, it is so much more than just that moment. So I came to Ottawa to share my story because I think that climate change isn't an abstract concept. It isn't something that will affect us one day. It is affecting me. It is affecting my daughter, who is still afraid of fire. It is affecting my entire community. And it's, again, not just that moment. We've lost so many people in the community because of suicide, overdose, illness aggravated by all of the stress and the trauma. It is ongoing. And it's not just Lytton. It's any of the, especially rural communities that are more likely to be affected. And I'm here to say that we need to do what we can. And if what we can do, one step that we can take that would have a phenomenal difference, is putting a very tangible cap on carbon emissions, something that actually makes a difference. We need to do it. There isn't a question about it. Because I am now, as I come out of the trauma, looking at my daughter and thinking, how is this going to affect her? She spent more than a third of her life in a burned up town. What's going to happen to her? What's going to happen to the generations after her? Especially if these disasters keep happening, especially if there is never a respite, if you don't feel safe in your own home. And unfortunately, that us from Lytton, that's how we feel. We know how quickly it can be taken away. Thanks for listening.
A few months ago, Megan Fandrich read out one of her poems after the fire on CBC Radio. Here it is.
Would you mind reading one of the poems? We were going to get you to read two, which is about, my understanding, the second time you visited the ruins of the cafe. Can you tell me a little bit about that day, a little bit about this poem?
Yeah, I think this happened in the spring after the fire, so almost a full year later. And up until that point, like I said, I had just been really focusing on survival. And at first we weren't even allowed on our properties, and then we were only allowed back with a security escort, and like, and there were all of these rules and restrictions around just visiting the place, you know, the place I had raised my daughter in. Mm-hmm. And I think somehow being in that hard winter and with all of those, for me, like impossible events, like the ongoing, the natural disasters, just being a single parent in a burned up town, and it was all so impossible. And so then when I would hear like, oh, you can only access your property with this or with that, and these, all of these rules, it would be too much. And so I couldn't go at all until I had a friend come to visit, and she said that she would go down to the property with me. And we went together, and it was being there finally with someone that I felt really safe with, and just letting myself sit there on the property. And then, as you'll hear in the poem, that is when anger finally surfaced. That's when my anger, like, just, it just appeared really suddenly. And that was amazing to step out of this, like, victimization, or, but not exactly victimization, but just this helplessness,
yeah,
of the trauma, of the change, of how impossible things were, and to step into that anger. It let me actually step into, I mean, as they say, like, but the five stages of grief, or the seven stages of grief, or however many there are, but to actually step into that process finally. Like, when I stepped into the anger, I stepped into finally forward movement, where I was no longer helpless. I could actually step into this active emotion and be really mad and control, I don't know, the experience around me through my anger. And from there, step away from the anger and finally away from the trauma. Not that I will ever completely be away from the trauma. The fire will always be part of me and part of us, but to actually take control over my life again. And I think for me, this moment in the poem is a pivotal moment in that progression of the emotion.
Megan, at your leisure, I would love for you to read it for us.
It's called Two. The second time I visited my ruins was in the spring, 9 months after the fire. The dangerous walls still standing, the loose bricks more settled, the ash and debris the same. A friend climbed into the basement, pit of ashes, with a hand rake, sifted for hours, uncovering relics of my past. Broken sculpture, fractured china, rusted jewelry, embedded in pieces of shattered glass. I sat at the top, watched what she pulled out, feeling nothing except a dull curiosity. How a burnt doorknob looks like a vase, or knitting needles crumble with touch, or only the ugliest dishes survive. Feeling dull curiosity, but no attachment to this excavation of life. She brought up jars, herb-infused salts, products I made in the kitchen a few days before the fire, the glass still intact, just scorched. She set them gently on the sidewalk beside me. And one by one, I smashed them.
That was Megan Fandrich reading a poem called Two from her new poetry collection. It's called Burning Sage, Poems from the Lytton Fire, and it's out now. Megan, join me from New York City.
As recorded by CBC Radio. The alarming thing from so many climate stories, it takes years to recover, and some things are never recovered. You don't trust life anymore. A whiff of smoke or a strange noise and sleep won't come. Even kids are nervous after being dehomed by extreme events. New England gets hurricanes like Irene, some nor'easters, of course, and flat-out winds. But this mother and small business person never expected the flood to come to her town. Jenny Siebold is a survivor of the Great Vermont Flood of 2023 in Montpelier.
Next, I would like to bring up Jenny Siebold from Vermont, who owns Rebel Heart Collective, a Montpelier business severely damaged when the Winooski River flooded in July 2023. Jenny has lived in Vermont for over 22 years and opened her business, which sells home goods, clothing, books, and jewelry, 5 years ago. Jenny is a single mother of three and suffered more than $60,000 in damage due to the flooding, and her store was closed for more than 6 months while flood damage was repaired. Jenny, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Been an emotional morning in my world. I'm Jenny Siebold, single mom of three kids. I live in Montpelier. I've lived here for over 20 years. And I started a business about 6 years ago with a lot of optimism and hope and some beautiful clothing store that I put my whole heart and soul into renovating. And then a little while back, I bought a flower shop and moved that into my business. So I can have clothes and flowers, and I love what I do, and I love being a part of my community. Last year, July 2024, July 11th, which is the same day that I founded my company, ironically, is the same day that the flood came through and filled up the shop and all of Montpelier. My shop was only 4 feet high. Some of the other shops were 7, 8, 9 feet high worth of floodwaters that came through. And it was devastating. And I'm still rebuilding. It's not stopped. It's hard. Every day I wake up and try to be as optimistic as possible to go forward. This is the way that I support my family. It's my sole income. My shops were closed for over 7 months. We just reopened in February in a very limited capacity. And there was no, you know, there's not a lot of money. FEMA doesn't help businesses. There's limited grants. Thank goodness I have some family support, because everything could have just fallen apart for me. I could have lost even more than I did. During those 7 months, I had to support my two kids who live with me, and one of them was launching off into the world, and I had to often wake up in the morning and decide, like, am I going to feed myself today, or am I going to send my kid off to pursue his dream? And he's worked so hard for his whole, you know, young adult life. And so oftentimes I would have an empty belly just to help him do what he needed to do. And it hasn't stopped. I'm open, but the economic liveliness has not returned to our town. Floodwaters don't just like go away and then you just like dry things out. You know, there was record temperatures after that. So then it was hot and everything had to get taken out. Otherwise it would mold. It's mind boggling. I would not wish this on my worst enemy. I had no idea I would watch these communities like Louisiana go through flooding or hurricanes. I had no comprehension what the actual impact is. It's gross. There's not to mention it was class 4 floodwater. So there was who knows what in the water. And we're just doing what we can as a community, banding together, getting it all out. But we had rashes and people had stomach bugs. People still have issues, health issues from exposure to all that. And yeah, it just continues to be really hard. And it feels like these communities are, we're like the band on the Titanic. Nobody wants to fix the ship that's going down, but they want all of these people to like just keep playing the music and bear the brunt. You know, people keep saying to me, you didn't do anything wrong. And I didn't. I didn't ask for a flood. None of us asked for this. But I feel like I did do something wrong. And just like, why can't I rebuild? Why can't I, you know, I'm still like applying for food stamps and like trying to just make ends meet. And yeah, and I'm just one person who has this story. And it, I don't know. I just... it's unfair. It's unfair that it's all pushed onto the people, you know, like the speaker before said, I'm not a survivor because I want to be. It's just, it's the only option. I have no other option. I have to continue moving on for my family and for a community that I really hold dear. And yeah, that's my story. I'm trying to be optimistic and move ahead, and but you know, there are good days and there are bad days, and I'm wealthy in optimism most days. So thanks for hearing me.
Jenny Siebold was flooded out in Vermont in 2023. Extreme rainfall events are striking all over the world. Just look at the Danube floods right now in Europe. They turn lives upside down for years afterwards. Somehow fire and floods can be related. One comes after the other. The interior of British Columbia is known for frightening wildfires, so Diana Boston was shocked when she had to run from the flood. Diana is a member of the Upper Nicola Band, the only Selix Okanagan First Nations community in the Nicola Valley in British Columbia. Her home was severely damaged in the 2021 flood of Merritt. Here is Diana Boston speaking in Ottawa, June 6th.
Hi there. My name is Diana Boston, and I come from the interior of British Columbia, Merritt, British Columbia. In November of 2021, we went through what they called an atmospheric flood. November 15th, I woke up with my husband at 3 in the morning, sent him off to work. Then at 3:30, I happened to notice some flashing lights out the back window. And as I looked in the backyard, we have a school field there. Looked like an ice rink. So I went out the front yard. I noticed this water going down our driveway. Water coming through our yard. So I went inside. I told my daughter, I said, hey, we're going to have to evacuate. And she said, for what? And I said, I think we're flooding. She said, no way. And she looked out her window. Our street was full of water. So we started packing up our dogs, our cat. We threw our rabbits and guinea pigs some food, hoping that they'd be okay. And we grabbed everything we thought we needed, and we took it all out to the truck. I remember walking out to the truck. The water was rushing so fast. I had to help my daughter walk to the truck. Got her in. I went to go behind the truck, but there was a garbage can blocking my way. I was so cold, and the water was so high, I couldn't even get over the garbage can. I had to hold my truck and walk around the front end of it. When I got into my truck, water started flowing into it. We had to go. Like, there was no way around it. We had to leave. So we got to higher grounds. And then we went to my in-laws. And then we found out that it was the Coldwater River that had flooded from the Fraser Valley into the Nicola Valley. We didn't lose our home, thank God. But our neighbors did. Their whole entire house fell down. And then when we actually got to see our house, we have a 4.5-foot crawl space. It was full of water, not even just water, silt and mud and guck. Our basement had a water line of 6 inches. You could just see all the muck and all the silt and everything all over the floors. Couldn't even walk in there. It was like 2 inches of silt. So we did what we could. We saved what we could. We thought everything else would be okay. You know, it's a little bit of mud. And then all of a sudden they started the restoration. We lost a lot of stuff. Everything from my children's childhood, all gone. Every homemade Father's Day gift, gone. Whole gym workout system, gone. Whole basement, gone. I had antiques handed down to me from my granny. Those are gone. Can't get them back. Can't restore them. They're gone. My kids don't even have photos anymore. But we're trying to live as best we can. So we left Merritt because the whole city got evacuated due to a sewage backup from the flooding. So we went to Kamloops, and the three of us, three dogs and a cat, all stayed in a one-bedroom condo for 2 months. Three adults, three dogs and a cat, all in one condo. We made it work. We did the best we could. We continued to remotely work, remotely do school. My daughter just got back to school in classroom schooling that September. Within 2 months, she's back to online learning in her grade 12 year. She didn't get to be with her friends. She didn't get to be with her peers. It was all through FaceTime. She lost a lot of her high school years, not just the pandemic, but the flood. And guess what? She made it. She graduated. We had an in-person graduation. It's been 2.5 years now. We finally got a fence built. We actually have a real fence, not just pieces of random wood we found in the alleyway or anything. We have a fence. We still have to do some siding, as there's still silt stuck inside the house. So we still have to rebuild that. We still have a lot of yard work that we have to get done. And when it rains, we can't sleep. When you hear the rain on your windows, it's just, you think about that night. And I would never want anybody to go through that ever again. I've never, ever want to go through that again. And if I didn't have my daughter, I don't know if I could have done it. And my husband's 3 hours away at work. He can't come and help us. So we did the best we could. We're trying to live our life now. And her and I came to Ottawa because we're done. We need to put a cap on these emissions. We need to help this world. We need to have a greener, healthier future. Not for us, for the next generations. In my culture, we think 7 generations ahead. That's what we need to start doing. 7 generations. Can they live here? That's what we need to think about. Them, not us. So please, hear us out, and thank you for listening.
That was Diana Boston from British Columbia. So coast to coast and everywhere in between, global warming brings unstable weather and unnatural disasters over and over. My thanks to Public Citizen, the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, and the Climate Action Network in Canada for bringing out these important voices from the climate front. Find links and more information in my show blog at ecoshock.org. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for including Radio EcoShock in your time and caring about our world.
My town is burning, never returning. Nowhere to go, no home. Old church, old school, old trees. In photographs, in my mind, my mind, in my mind. Strong memories keep me in that place, the place that's gone.
This is Thurston. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby. Yeah, I'll keep listening.
And now for a CJSF Heritage Minute. Simon Fraser University, the 1960s. In the earliest days of SFU, a renegade, unlicensed radio station begins broadcasting around campus. 1974. Volunteers establish the Simon Fraser Campus Radio Society, which operates CJSF to this day. 1985. The station obtains a cable license, bringing CJSF to a wider audience. And we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since.